very much.
Now, whenever I think of the public day, a word that really comes to me is the word threshold. Because we're here to celebrate, you know, a threshold with our students, you know, about to cross. This is about, for a certificate holder, a threshold might be consolidating, you know, our knowledge in astrology. But
excuse me, would you speak up,
please?
Oh,
of
there's a mic.
I don't know, I'm shy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about Uranus and technology, I might as well embrace it.
Do you want the lectern as well?
No, I think that's okay. Hello?
No.
You know what, I think I might try to do it myself. Okay. Thanks. That's what I do in therapy. So, I was telling about the thresholds, and I'm telling about the certificate students. The threshold might be around, you know, that someone has studied for 3 modules and they got, you know, the first exam. That might be about deciding to commit to astrologer and go and study it further, or it might be about starting clients and feeling confident about it. But if you are like a diploma, holder, the threshold is a lot more clearly marked, and that might be about, you know, you've been studying astrology and 9 modules, and you know, you're not a student anymore. Your astrology, I guess, the world is more projects of friendship. And now you get a vocational qualification, widely recognized in the, you know, astrological world, and you're about to go out and pursue astrology as a career, perhaps. You know. And I think most of you would join me and would agree in saying that astrology is not just, you know, a profession is a calling, and you know, it sounds a cliche, and you know, cliches, you know, might sound commonplace, but they do hold a grain of truth with them. And that is that astrology finds you as much as you find it, you know. It hits you gently on the head, or not so gently sometimes, as if by serendipity. And then you are hooked, you know. Michael Lutin said, astrology is like a hotel. You check in, but you never check out. Speak of the devil. However, the question still stays, how do we make the transition from have a calling, how do we bridge the gap between our sense of calling and making a career out of astrology? And as you have seen, I've used the word impossible and said about the impossible profession here, because I'm using this word, I'm borrowing it from Freud, good old Freud. And he talked about impossible professions, talking about analysis, and then analysis says it almost looks as if analysis were the third of those impossible professions in which one can be sure beforehand of achieving and satisfying results. The other two, which have been known much longer, are education and government. Achieving and satisfying results. I mean, what is that we do, you know, especially when it comes to people expecting a prediction, you know, how do we qualify what we do as astrologers? But it's not impossible because of that only. It's impossible because, you know, astrology is not recognized as a profession as such. There are no A levels, there are no GCSEs, there are no clear entry into it. You know, don't go to a career counselor, you do a Myers-Briggs test and say to you, hey, I think you are like ENFG, I think you should be an astrologer. No, don't have like this. But it's also impossible because in our everyday life you say, hey, I'm an astrologer. It says, what exactly do you do? It says, and how do you make a living? I says, well, queue up on the door, you know, and get the benefit. Well, that's not how it However, I think in this talk I would like to explore some of the joys and burdens of being an astrologer. And since the theme is about being an astrologer in the world, you know, I thought maybe we can look at the joys and burdens through the Trans-Saturnian collective planets. This is Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus. And I'll try to say something how these planets represent us in the world, but also say something how we use our energies in our work, and how they enhance, you know, what it is that we do. And I will start with the big body, and that's, well, Pluto, and I'm afraid it's not the good, the bad, the ugly, it's the bad, the ugly first, you know, as everyone with Pluto knows, because it's a heavy planet. And I think one of the most interesting things about Pluto, in the mythology we have, is Hades, who is the god of the underworld. And he rarely comes up to the surface, unless to do some kind of mischievous deed, like abducting and raping Persephone, you know. And like Hades, and he comes up with the helmet of invisibility. And I think like, you know, Hades, astrologers were invisible beings, you know, we're working behind the scenes. And we have a powerful tool in our hands, but we never come to the surface unless in our role as sun sign astrologers, or, you know, whenever, you know, scientists want to attack us once again, you know. The thing is that astrology used to be very prominent up until the 17th century, you know, and then the Age of Enlightenment came, and, you know, the only way of approaching reality is through the mind and scientific proof, and astrology kind of disappeared. But it didn't quite disappear, it went underground and then re-emerged again early 20th century, it took a different form. I think, you know, there's definitely a joy in being able to go incognito, but there's also, you know, when we put ourselves out there as astrologers, and we think of as a career, and when we think of career, we think of the MC, something about being seen in the chart, then something doesn't feel quite right. I'm reminded here of Winnicott quote, who said, "It is a joy to be hidden, and disaster not to be found." The other thing is, even with a tiny bit of recognition as astrologers, and we don't get it, then Pluto has a unique capacity to draw everything in the underworld, in the unconscious, and then make something monstrous out of it. Not always, you know, but it might happen. But it's not just being invisible. You know, I think if in astrology Saturn carries the individual shadow, you know, in the chart, then astrology carries the, Pluto carries the, is the collective shadow, you know, and as astrologers, we've been the carriers of collective shadow for some time. And one such systematic like attack was in 1975 when 192 scientists, under the guidance of the astronomer Bart Polk, published a short book called Objections to Astrology, in which we're actually, you know, characterized as astrology being as magic and superstition, and it's available on Amazon and in a very good price. But we don't have to go that far into time because we have our own personal guru. This is Mr. Dr. Richard Dawkins. He is the author of The Selfish Gene, you know, and The God Illusion, who is a pop scientist from his godless cave every now and again emerges, telling us why astrology and anything else, you know, doesn't quite fit, you know, his mindset, how it all, you know, fit to his idea of the world. And, you know, my 3-minute ranting about him, I will offer it in terms of a myth, you know, not so well known. And this is the myth of, this is the myth of Procrustes. He's the son of Poseidon. And so what he does, this chap has his stronghold, he's outside Athens, and he's got an iron bed. And he says to his guest, "Hey, come and spend the night here with me." And so everyone goes to sleep on the bed, and then his legs don't fit exactly the length of the bed. And then he has to stretch them, you know, until they fit. Or, you know, if they kind of go over, then he amputates the excess length. And then in a similar fashion, you know, but doesn't seem to fit the scientific, like, you know, it has to be everything that cannot be justified, and it has to be stretched to fit the scientific model. Or if it doesn't, it's been chopped off and put it down to the underworld. However, let us not despair. Dennis Elwell, this amazing astrologer, you know, in his book The Cosmic Loom, he says something about our role as astrologers, that we are travelers, we are explorers. And what he says is, he says, "Indeed, it is easy to avert the gaze from these grey areas and assert that only black and white shall pass muster. In a complex, rich, baffling universe, that is the soft option. To say it will give credence only to what can be quantified or understood in terms of physical mechanism is to elect to live for the sake of fictional certitude in a pathetically narrowed reality. From behind the barricades, you will have the satisfaction of being able to smirk and grimace at those of braver intellect and make sport of their creative vulnerability to error." I want to say something about Pluto in Capricorn, you know. Pluto in Capricorn ingressed in November 2008, and the world turned upside down. This is a really an earth sign we were kind of expecting at the time it would happen. Well, companies collapsed, countries went into debt and collapsed as well. You know, living costs went up, salaries stayed the same, the gap between the rich and the poor, you know, became even larger, and of course we have the supremacy of home ownership. This is the shadow side of, you know, side of Boson in capital, which is perhaps cancer. I remember I was in the Faculty of Philosophical Studies summer school in 2008. That was August before Buddha went to Capricorn. And Michael Lutin said something about, he made a comment about this Pluto's ingress in Capricorn. He said that the world will turn upside down, people will lose their security, and they're likely to fall prey, you know, to whoever will come and promise them that everything's going to be okay, an authority figure, you know. This is very much Capricorn, you know, and we see that playing out in the world today, hopefully not exclusively, in terms of nationalism, again, go back to cancer, you know, extreme politics, you know, right-wing, human rights abuses, etc., etc. I think as humanity perhaps backtracks before it moves forward, astrology is likely to be, you know, attacked again, but hey, you know, we're kind of used to that. But also, you know, the scapegoating can take the place in terms of, you said someone, an astrologer says, well, that's rubbish, you know. I says, you only ask me what I do for a living. And, you know, people might say something like, science has proven astrology wrong. Well, the combination of not being seen and, you know, being the scapegoat is a perfect, you know, recipe for this sense of omnipotence, you know, and perhaps a sense of self-deflation, because you kind of go and check. And there is, you might feel that you're an omnipotent, you know, a professional. That can play out a lot in the relationship, you know, in the session. So you're not seen by anybody else around you. The client might come for a reading, and then you might expect them to see you, and you want to play your power tricks perhaps in them. But also it can be about how do you handle power when you do a reading? Do you allow the person to lead the session in some way, you know? Or if you say to someone, well, that one Jupiter, you know, is very busy, says, I've never experienced like this, and maybe they don't take the criticism. How do you take criticism for what you say? People say, you know, you say, well, you're just, you know, not as involved as I am, you know, whatever it might be. Anyway, let's go to the good stuff, because yes, there's some good stuff, but as in the myth of Persephone, one has to be initiated, you know. I don't know if you know the myth, but it's about, you know, Persephone is just this very innocent girl, and then it's a flat and Narcissus, and Hades comes up to the surface and, you know, takes you to the underworld. And obviously she doesn't like it to begin with, but then what happens is eventually she finds secret riches, you know, and a pomegranate, and she becomes the queen of the underworld, and spends some time there and some time up in the earth. And I think, you know, in a similar fashion, you know, anyone who's been through a personal, like, transit, you know, Pluto transit on any of our personal planets, they will know something about the descent. And at the time, it might feel very difficult to find any joy, you know, in that process of something being eliminated, something being taken away by force, something not quite feeling right, and someone's pulling the rug and you're about to fall down. However, you know, Pluto puts us in touch with that process of birth, decay, and death. If astrology has something to say to the modern world, it's everything that is born in time, this is the ascendant, culminates the MC, sets in the descendant, and then dies the IC and the end of matter, the end of things, you know. And Pluto puts us in touch with that part of that process, has to do with death and elimination. And I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily, I think this is a great gift, if, because we have an image to actually embrace that in our everyday life. And it doesn't mean that it's any more easier for us as astrologers, you know, to go through that process of death, or to see a necessity of this Pluto and Capricorn, that some things have to change, and you have to irrevocably die and go. But at least we have something to have a concept how to navigate. But also, like Persephone, we're able to reside in two worlds, you know, one the god of the underworld and the world of the, you know, of the life, perhaps. And there's something very life-affirming and life-destroying about Pluto and being able to honor and to hold both in your hands. And of course, you can bring this into our client work, and it was on this very same room, you know, almost the same day when, you know, Kim Farley, last year, she gave an amazing talk about calm seas make poor sailors, about the consultation work. And she said about, you know, the client coming with a Pluto transit on their moon, you know, and the whole life is just, emotional life is falling apart. And you said about the importance of, no matter how excited we might feel about, yeah, that place is astrologically exactly as it should, you know, to be able to stay with the client and to listen to what they have to say. And I think Pluto bestows on us the ability to hold that intensity and to be really climbing. And perhaps we can give them like an image, you know, how about what they're going through, a metaphor they can play with. And maybe if it is appropriate, we can say something, hey, there are three hits, you know, and maybe in 18 months, you know, things might be resolved or lose some of the intensity. And I think that's something, and we can do that. That's something that we can bring into our world. If Pluto defines what we do in black and white, then Neptune, you know, really opens up a whole realm of possibilities. I love that meme. I think it's yes. That's what I do in my practice. But also, and of course, you know, I love here we start with Neptune or Pisces, and then you go to Virgo. You have to discriminate into the mass of information. It says, oh my God, how do they do? You know, hey, that's part of the process. But it can be that as well. Misty confessions, murder by sex magic. By Norgo. I'm sorry, you know, this is not a reflection of astrologer, but I think this is how we are portrayed, you know, in the video. And I think, you know, and so we know that Neptune, you know, is a great illusionist. It really likes, you know, the image, and it likes very much also taking a grain of truth and kind of extending it and make it very unreal and then putting it out there for the masses to go for. And I think in many ways astrology through that Neptunian lens has played out in terms of sun sign astrology, which is also like a smoke screen, you know, and you know, cares most about what we do. And most people, when they think of astrology, they think, you know, of a column in a magazine or newspaper they read about their sun sign. And this is not a criticism to sun sign astrology in any way, because I do read them and I find them entertaining. And everyone has, in this infinite Neptunian universe, anyone can have, there's plenty of space for everyone to develop their craft as they seem necessary and good for them. But at the same time, sometimes we contribute the confusion around what we do as astrologers. But also, you know, the kind of standard boring now argument of, hey, there are 7 billion people in the world. How can I all be fit into a category? Indeed, it must be very packed, you know. they consider what astrology is, you know, because astrology deals better with individual moments and moments in time, you know. And what we do is we take a moment, you know, and we try to see how that moment is different qualitatively from any other moment in time, and perhaps, you know, sun sign astrology doesn't quite communicate that. However, here's a, you know, next bit is a guru syndrome, you know. I mean, I walk into my work in the office and people say, hey, it's the end of the world, it's the end of the holiday, the Mayan calendar. It's, oh, really, you know, it's what you have to say. It says, I haven't got a clue. You're an astrologer. Well, yes, but I need something more than that, you know, to tell you, you know. The interesting question is, you know, the meaning behind that question is when people ask about the end of the world, they usually mean about the end of the human world, you know. For some species, you know, the old has already come and some are already living it right now. But else we can go to a party, you know, and, you know, someone says, hey, I've just met this wonderful guy and he's Pisces and I'm Gemini. What do you think? Well, don't go there. But you don't really do it, you know. I don't know, because, yes, it doesn't sound very compatible, but I have to look at the whole picture, you know. And I think we need to be needed, you know, and that's something that I say in my next point, you know, sometimes because we're not being seen, we like to kind of feel needed. People come to us and, you know, offer them some kind of insight and, you know, to... And don't get me wrong, we do have access to lots of insight with astrology, and that has something to say about many, many, many different areas of experience in life. But, you know, it's easy to become a bit self-inflated about it, you know, and to think that you're just a medium for the larger bit, and not the larger bit itself, that can be close. And of course, when we go into the astrology... Sorry, can I say? then, you know, astrology definitely raises our sensitivity, you know, and this lack of boundaries, and we can really feel, you know, the pain in the world. We can kind of try to heal, you know, through our art, or to take too much on board. That's a perfect recipe for forgetting our own needs in the process and doing perhaps too much, you know, for other people and very little for us. And, you know, we can also play out in the terms of, you know, when we go into Neptune's territory, we are very impressionable, you know, and very easy to take on board other people's thoughts and feelings. And it's very easy to internalize people's view of astrology and might not be aware of that, and might play out as perhaps not valuing what we have in our hands, and not valuing, you know, in terms of what we can offer practically to other people, but also, you know, not really charging. You know, a lawyer or a doctor, which has really, you know, a high fee. And I've met astrologers through my experience, which has done like £10 for reading, even if it's a turning time, the amount of work you put preparing beforehand just doesn't justify it. And I think a healthy dose of reality and sense of boundaries, that's Saturn for the Monkeys, you know, can offset those issues in many ways. However, when we go into Neptune's realm, there are also joys. And I think one of the great things is that, you know, we enter the realm of imagination and infinite possibilities. Like the scientists, you know, they still find new species in the sea, in the deep oceans. In the same way, you know, astrology can say something about the way we open ourselves to new ideas and new images and new inspiration. And especially in relation to our art, what it is that we do, you know, we have basically 11 planetary bodies, 12 signs, 12 houses, a handful of aspects, and we try to make a story, to say something about the person who comes for the reading. And what's very interesting, you can look at the same aspect, like Moon, Neptune, again and again, and every time, you know, you can approach in a different way, a new layer of symbolism can come into that, and this is Neptune Rihanna. But equally, we have about, Neptune gives us compassion and empathy. People who come to us usually are in crisis, you know, and they need to be held. And the image I have, Pluto allows us to hold the intensity, the hot stuff, but Neptune does it more gently. I love this image because, like the water, holds the person very, very gently, you know, and it's something very soothing. And we can bring that thing into our work as well. But also, you know, Neptune, you know, and astrology through Neptune allow us a sense of connection with the cosmos. You know, we have one foot, you know, we give a sense of, you know, there's something wider than us. And that's going to be a very useful thing and very helpful in troubled times like this, when, you know, the world is such an insecure place. So it can give us the ability to find our center. And here I have the line from the same poet of the Seleucid Elegies, who says, in order to stand firmly on the world, make sure you have one foot outside. Don't put all your legs in this world for some reason. And of course, you know, let's say something about Neptune in Pisces, you know. And when I think of Neptune in Pisces, well, I have the rhythmic songs in my head, who says, Sweet Dreams, who says, everybody is looking for something. Especially, you know, since with Pluto and Capricorn, our material world, you know, started to collapse. Everyone is trying to find perhaps some kind of support outside the material. And I think that's something that we as astrologers, you know, we can really facilitate, you know. I don't mean making a religion out of astrology and setting our camp next to the other religions and going into war. It's the story of humanity for the last 2,000 years. But that's the testing is perhaps astrology tells us that we all have the same planets in our charts. We all have, so, and they also, we're all one, although they manifest very differently. And also, you know, we can guide people in their quest for meaning and, you know, the yearnings perhaps to connect with something higher. And we don't have to do it by dumping our own beliefs and ideas and preconceptions and biases on them. We can do it by looking at that piece of paper that has their chart. Okay, look at their ninth house. What's on the cusp there? Where is Jupiter? You know, what aspects does it make? What's the ruler of the ninth house? What's in the 12th house? Where is Neptune? So I think that's something that can come into our world. And hey, that's Uranus, you know, the art of being different. And I think I'll be fairly quick with that because he likes speed. So Uranus is closely related to astrology. And, you know, they say that people with strong Uranus, you know, they're very attracted to you, sorry, to your astrology. And I think it's been explored extensively, you know, by lots of colleagues, you know, especially this screen talking about, you know, Uranus and the Prometheus and all these kind of things. But I would like to explore it here through its association with uniqueness, independence, and, of course, technology. How did this relate to our world? What are the joys and how are they burden us? And, of course, when we enter Uranus realm, it's about being different. Everyone has a different journey into astrology. Everyone has landed in a different way, although I'm not sure that landing is a good word, because Uranus likes taking off and sky vision. However, being an astrologer, well, you're a bit of a cuckoo, you stand out from the crowd, you know, and we're a rare breed, after all. And one wonders, you know, if astrology was a, you know, mainstream, whether Uranus would be so such a hurtful planet for us. But also, as I said before, astrology works up is about differentiating time, taking a moment, see where the planets are, and see how it's different from everybody else. And of course, because self-employment and independence, having an annual astrologer working in an office, or having, like, you know, a month's holiday, you know, or, you know, a pension at the end of it. So most of us were self-employed and, you know, have to find a way of making our own living, you know, into how to ground, you know, our vocation into, you know, something more tangible. And of course, because we're in Aries and, you know, we've seen how it's played out, our spring, war, you know, and new kind of place where it all starts up. But also, what I like about this, it says favors an independent spirit, the courage to be different, you know, the courage to be a maverick and stand out of the crowd. And if Uranus is a planet that has an association with astrology, perhaps it says to stand out for astrology, you know, because it has something valuable to say in that good old world, you know, that we live in. And I would like to say something about technology. I think that's the idea. When I was found this, it's a walkie-talkie, car shop, speed service, a drive-in restaurant. This person must have a new Uranus, you know, who actually came up with the idea. And Uranus is about speed and God, you know. I wouldn't like to be like before solar fire, like area when, you know, I have spent hours casting a chart. So now you have a solar fire, you put, or any other program, you know, you put in the details, and seconds later you go to the chart. So that really makes our art very easy, you know, makes things easier for us. But also, you know, now we have the internet, so we can have a website, we have a blog, you can have a Facebook page, or a Twitter account, or anything, and you can reach out to wider audiences. And I think that in relation to self-employment means that we can actually reach out to more people, and our services are not limited geographically, you know, by where we live. We can really spread out. And of course, new means of communication. You have, like, you know, you can obviously chip international calls, but also you can have Skype, or you can have, like, Viber, you have smartphone, so internet-based calling and communication. And I think that facilitates our work and makes it possible for us to reach out for a wider audience. However, what's missing here? And again, I return to another great poet who says maybe what's missing here is the soul of the company, the body. You know, if a computer produces a chart, you know, I will never get to actually draw a chart. And I believe guilty, I don't draw the chart, I'm aware how missing out on the process. And perhaps the chart is never grounded, you know, now in on the earth, you know, on the earthiness. If the other person is only a voice, you know, on the other side of the continent, you know, then it's very easy to forget. This is someone who has a body and good feelings. I remember in Module 9, I had Clara Martin as my tutor, and she said something. Every time you're about to open your mouth and say something to a client, just hold the image of them as a baby in your head, you know. And however, we might miss something because if we don't do readings anymore in person, you know, or the person is physically present, then we might miss some of the cues of the body communication, you know, the body language that might be important in how we go about, you know, offering something to the client or making the session, you know, giving them something that can be transformative in some ways. Or, you know, a lack of physical contact might mean that perhaps we will not have the responsibility for what we put out there, because we're never going to see the person again on the other side of the continent. We might be a bit lax in how we prepare for the reading, you know. or might miss out on the rituals, you know. I mean, I think it's okay to do it in your pyjamas, a bottle of whiskey, and a big pack cigar. That's not how you're reading Solar Sky. But I'm afraid, you know, sometimes you need to have a grounding ritual before and perhaps after. So, again, I'm not here pushing down in our throats like you should do, draw the hand, you know, by the chart by hand. You should actually only do one-to-one consultations. I'm just saying how some of the things can crop up by not personally being present. I think if we identify too closely with Uranus in our work, then, you know, we might lose something of our own earthiness, Gaia, you know, perhaps our humanity in the way we use our craft in the world. And I would like to finish with a quote, which is a Marx phrase, and I got it from Sue Tompkins' books, and says, "Technology is the knack of so arranging the world that we don't have to experience it." Thank you.
Thank you. That was lovely.
Thank you. Thank you.